Shifting gears radically here, how often are you recognized out in public?
Almost never.
Really?
Almost never. And when I say almost never, once every 5 years.
Wow. Not even, I could see not recognizing you because you're a radio guy, and of course no one's going to know what you look like. And I know you go to lengths
right.
to try and hide what you...
Right. I mean, nobody knows who the hell I am.
You feel radio is theater to the mind. And it did surprise me that you are a African-American 60-year-old.
Yes, but I'm also a quadriplegic, and a lot of people don't know that.
Okay.
And I also have elephant man syndrome, and a lot of people don't know that.
I didn't know it.
And that I was the snake woman at the Midway, at the fair back in the 70s, so I have that weird problem.
Right.
And that I have scales on my popo. Little. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. But these fans... That surprised me. Even when they're talking with you, they don't recognize the voice?
Nope.
Although I could see that, because when you hear yourself on the air...
Yeah.
Well, it sounds different even than when you're talking to you live on the phone. There's a different sound to the voice.
Yeah. The last guy who recognized my voice was a Mickey's Diner cook 5-6 years ago. It was the last time anybody said, "You sound like Mishki."
Wow. I would have expected more would have recognized you, even the voice. But one listener did want to know, how do you expect fans to act around you, and how do they act around you?
Oh, they're just very pleasant and complimentary and kind. I've never met anybody who listens to the show who did anything strange in my presence in terms of coming up to me. Or I mean, they just say the same thing. Enjoy the show. Nice to meet you. It's the normal thing.
Just the same sort of thing you'd hear on the broadcast itself?
Yeah, yeah. People are you know, they're always very kind and complimentary, and I just have learned to say thank you and to leave it at that.
Okay. If you were in a fan's position and listened to the Mishki broadcast, do you think you'd ever be the sort of fan or fanatic that the broadcast seems to attract?
Well, I became a little bit of that way with Vogel. When Vogel was on, I was a little... I mean... I thought about him a lot and thought about his show a lot. And, you know, I he fascinated me. And
my wife says that as I'm transferring tapes over to Mishki Madness and taping the show nightly.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm trying to think if there was someone besides Vogel in my life. You know, certainly I think I get almost a bit into the fanatic department with Bob Dylan. He fascinates me. His talents fascinate me. His life fascinates me.
Have you ever met Dylan, by the way?
Yeah, I met him in Rochester before a concert there. I got to go backstage.
How'd that come about?
I knew a friend of his named Larry Keegan, who's no longer with us. He died on the same day as the attacks on the Pentagon and World Trade Center, but he was Dylan's best buddy growing up and lived around here in the Twin Cities, and I got to know him. And one time, Tom Whaley from the St. Paul Saints called me and said his employer, Mike Vec, who was a buddy of mine, was having a birthday, and would I try to get the people I know in town who know Dylan to hook up Vec and Dylan? And I said to Tom Whaley, "Yeah, right. I just make a couple of calls, and I'm sure you can just go meet Bob Dylan." I mean, I didn't think Bob Dylan met people. But I said I would make the call just so that I could call him back with a clear conscience and say, they laughed at me and don't ever ask me to do something like that again. But doggone it, if they didn't follow through, Larry Keegan wrote a letter, got it to the green room down in Rochester where Dylan was performing, and asked if Bob would do him a favor and meet with Vec. And we went down there, and he called us in to his room prior to the concert. And he was very pleasant. He was a gentleman. He smiled. Just very, very kind soul. I was stunned. Everything I had heard about him and read about him, I thought he'd be some sort of a aloof, mysterious guy. But he was just a... just another good Minnesotan, just another pleasant, happy Minnesotan, not overly into himself or full of himself. I found it, he laughed and smiled and joked, and we talked about silly things and left. It would have been no different than meeting a guy who I really loved because I'm a big fan of Amoco stations, and he owns all of them in town, and got to go into the back room at an Amoco and talk to him. It was about that interesting. but also that pleasant.
How long did you get to speak with him or be backstage?
12 minutes, maybe.
Okay.
It was literally seconds before it was minutes before he was going on. I mean, he got done with us, and in 3 minutes he was on stage performing. I mean, it was right before he was going on.
Wow.
This is amazing that he had that sort of calm prior to going on.
So I know you're a big fan of Dylan's. Are there a couple others that you can say that you're a huge fan of musically, either groups or individuals?
No, I was a huge fan of Morrison, Van Morrison. I read his biography. I already knew he was kind of a brooding guy, a brooding Irishman, but boy, he's a miserable SOB. That was a little tough to learn after reading his biography.
I remember when you interviewed the fellow who had written that book.
Yeah, that hurt. You know, yeah. There is one unhappy human being. So, and mean. That's always tough to read. Some guys who people may or may not know, people like Ramblin' Jack Elliott, who was a guy I got to know who taught Dylan a lot of things and traveled with Woody Guthrie. And, of course, Woody Guthrie, a big fan of his stuff. And Spider John Kerner, locally in town. I just think the world of him and love every chance I can to sit down and talk with him. He's sort of a legend locally. Another guy who was buddies with Dylan. When I was a kid, my hero was Buddy Rich, the drummer, and I used to tape every time he was on Johnny Carson, cassette tape. I was a drummer. I used to be a drummer years ago, and he was my hero, Buddy Rich was, and
okay.
Stuff like that.
How about authors and books?
Twain. Twain's Twain's the guy I just love more than anyone else in terms of authors. I love reading about Churchill. I really love personally the human being who was Winston Churchill. Lincoln, other authors though.
What was that book? The book you always, I hear you recommend it to. You listed as your favorite book.
Thanks for reminding me. See, on the spot here, I can't come up with these. I have a lot of people I can name, but Linyutang wrote back in the 30s and 40s, and really, there's a book he wrote called The Importance of Living, which is one of the greatest books I've ever read. I just love that book. That's sort of my Bible.
Okay. You've said quite a few there.
Yeah. I'm a big believer in reading the classics. You know, there's so many books out there, and there's only so many years that you're alive. You might as well go read all the great ones, you know, Moby Dick and Huck and
right.
And just, you know, might as well go through all the greats and, you know, read your Hemingway and then if you have time afterwards to, but there are too many books out there. I'm sure there, one thing I don't do is read a lot of contemporary fiction. I like a lot of contemporary nonfiction. If it's fiction I'm going to read, I tend to go back to those books that I still have to pore through from the 19th and early 20th century. Those, you know, when fiction was, when writers were king, you know, before television came along or radio came along.
And speaking of television, any shows?
By the way, I should also say, to be fair, that Keeler is a hero of mine. And not just because of his success with his radio show. In fact, I think even more of him as a writer. But because he happens to live across town, and because, you know, he's a local boy, and because he is as great as he is, I think the world of him. And he has been very kind to me and had me over to his house for lunch and talked shop with me as though he and I can ever be thought to do the same thing. The only thing we have in common is that you got to turn on a radio to hear us. But he's a wonderful guy. Has been very nice to me, and Think the world of him.
Have you ever gone over to the Fitzgerald and caught a
No, I've never
recording?
Seen it, so I'm afraid to, because I don't like... See, you just asked earlier if you could watch my radio show, and I told you no. I don't like watching radio. I don't believe in it. You know, when you go to the fair, you watch radio shows, but I don't... You know, that I'm contractually obligated to do my show at the fair, and I've told them I'll quit before I'll do my show at the fair. And fortunately, they haven't allowed me to walk out that door, but I've been close. I've been close. Huh. We've gotten to the point where they said, well, maybe we have to part ways.
Wow.
Because I don't believe in watching radio, but that's what Keeler has going there at the Fitzgerald. I just like to listen.
Wasn't the guy from, his name escapes me, from CCO, wasn't he the same way?
Oh, Cannon is a great guy. I've had an opportunity to get to know him. In fact, one time he and I went out to lunch, and I got back to his house. It was wintertime. I got back to his house at 3:30 in the afternoon. Dropping him off, and pulled up in front of his house, and we were just BSing a little bit before he got out of the car. It's 3:30 in the afternoon. And when he got out of the car and shut the door, it was 7 p.m.
Say again, what time had you pulled into the driveway?
3:30 in the afternoon.
Wow.
Yep, that was a long Midwestern goodbye there.
Yeah. Well, he was a true local
radio legend
for years.
You know, those shares I was talking about earlier in this interview?
Yes.
At his height, he was at a 35 share. You can't find any place in the United States in the last 25 years where a radio show had a 35 share.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was a phenomenon unlike anything seen in radio. I mean, he should be in a National Broadcasting Hall of Fame, not the state one.
Well, I certainly have memories growing up, as I think anybody from Minnesota or the Twin Cities area, the parents always had CCO on. You always heard this guy on the air.
Everybody had CCO on.
Yeah, it was just playing in the background. Yeah. It was always there. But are you, speaking of Keeler and Cannon, are you a big fan of any other radio broadcasts that are out there right now? Or don't you listen much yourself to the radio?
I do. I like some of the guys at KFAN.
Okay.
In fact, to be perfectly honest, I like all the guys at KFAN from PA and Dubé through Barrero. And the only reason I don't know about before PA and Dubé is, I mean, I know what they have, but I don't get a chance to listen. It's because I work so late at night. So then I by the time I'm up and out the door, I don't catch morning drive radio. So I don't know anything about what's going on in morning drive radio in the Twin Cities.
Right.
I do listen to, some other talk radio. If NPR has on a particular noon speaker who's really interesting, I like that. Terry Gross does, if she, you know, I was driving the other day, heard her interview Bill Murray, and when she's interviewing someone I'm fascinated by, I love listening to her interview that person. I like Dark. I like Dark Star. When I drive home at night, he's a character. I like to tune him in if the Coast to Coast thing isn't doing anything for me. I'm obviously not a big conservative radio listener, so it's a little... I
so
listen
not to, much of the AM 1500?
No, I like Mark and Ron. I like their show. I think they do a good job. And I don't think they're actually real strong one way or the other, which I like. I think that they're, you know, they can't be called extreme at all. So I enjoy that show. But, you know, and Succi, when he's just, you know, being a character or something, but I don't like the political stuff. I sense a sort of a mean-spiritedness in a lot of the political stuff, just a divisiveness and a sense of not only sticking the knife in, but turning it. Yeah, it's too, you know, you get the feeling by the end that we're not even all Americans, that it's you know, us against the Jerrys, and it's World War II, and we're talking here about people who live in the same country. I just think it gets too crazy.
Okay. Speaking of Keeler and his numerous writings, novels, essays, any chance that you'd write a book yourself or take up any sort of regular writing?
Well,
I know you've done it in the past, like you said, with the reader and so forth.
I mean, anybody who is creative at all and you say, would you like to write a book, and says no, I mean, they're lying. You know, the fear is that the book wouldn't be any good or you don't have anything to say. I mean, I don't think about answering a question like that. I'd love to be able to one day look on a shelf, see my name on a book, know I wrote it, and have that book actually be good. But do I have the talent for that? I don't know. I can't. When I have authors on, I can't get my brain around how much work that book was. Sometimes I talk to guys, I said, how long did it take you to write this? They say 10 years. I mean, I get up in the morning, I have to do a show that night, and then the show's over with, and I think a project, 10 years. I don't know.
It does seem a little daunting.
Yeah, I mean, what I
and that
I
is what you hear. Books like are in to, terms of years, yeah, usually.
I'd like to do everything. You know, I'd love to write a great play. I'd love to win a Tony Award or something. But I mean, is it realistic? I don't know.
Okay. Are there any television shows that you're a fan of, or that you would go out of your way to catch regularly?
The problem with TV and me are when I started in nighttime radio, all the good shows, as I'm sure is the case today, were on in the evening. And because I worked nights, I disconnected from television because when I was home during the day, all the rotten shows were on. So I just got it out of my head that I'd ever be a TV guy. I just thought, okay, when good shows are on, I'm working. So I disengaged, and years went by. I mean, whole shows came on. I never saw a whole Seinfeld show.
Wow.
So, but you know what's funny about pop culture is if shows get big enough and popular enough, just by reading the paper, you can pretty much get on board with everybody because they're written about so much.
True.
You know, I know all about Seinfeld, all about the characters, all about some of the storylines without even watching the show. So it allows you to still sort of keep pace. But never saw Friends show, read all about it because I read you know, I read the to do my job, you have to read all the papers and all that stuff, but never taped things. Don't know how to tape a show. I've never taped a show in my life. I have no idea how you do that.
Yeah.
And so I'm out of the loop. And a funny thing was, when I moved to 10 o'clock at night,
yeah,
I thought, maybe I'll go and become a TV guy again. I thought maybe, because it's really weird if you're not a TV guy, it's hard late in life to just become one. I mean, the older you get, the more set in your ways you get. And I just was not used to sitting on a couch in the evening watching a screen. It's just when you get away from that for 10 years, you just don't think about that. You don't associate. The only thing I watched was sports on the weekend. You know, I would watch a Vikings game on the weekend, or I would watch a baseball game on the weekend or something. So when I thought maybe I'm 10 o'clock now, maybe I'll check in. And the world had changed. The world had completely changed. I felt like Rip Van Winkle. Everything, the shows, the humor, everything was different. The writers, a new group of writers had come along with different ideas of what's clever, what's funny, and I felt like I was in Europe or something, like I had traveled to a new country, and, oh, look what these people are into. And then the ads were, you know, all these pharmaceutical companies, and they weren't there the last time I watched television regularly.
Interesting.
And I couldn't believe it. And I thought, boy, why doesn't everybody make fun of this stuff? Look at all this. Look at how silly it all is.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there, you know, again, I'm sure there are some quality shows, too. I don't have cable, and I know a lot of good stuff's on there, but I don't have that. So, and one of the reasons I don't have it is I have kids, and I just don't want to have a box that they can, you know, if you have cable, they're going to find something they like at every second of the day. When you don't have cable, there's tons of hours where the kids go, there's nothing on, which you just love because then they read a book or do something else. So you keep the choices so down to a number where, I mean, there's hardly anything on my kids ever like. But if I got cable, look out.
Right.
ESPN alone, I'd be screwed on the one boy. So I don't have a show. I don't have a show.
Okay.
But I like movies.
How often do you make it out to the movies?
I go all the time. I see all the movies.
Really?
My wife and I, it's our favorite thing. Yeah, just to disappear into that whole world. It doesn't work renting it, but just that whole world of disappearing into the dark and just sitting in a dark room with his gigantic screen and just this story unfolding with no commercials and just getting lost, just escaping into that world. And then when it's over and you walk outside, oh, yeah, I'm Tom Mischke. Oh, yeah, or it's Saturday. I just love, it's like a drug to me. It just takes you away and then you come down off it and you plop back out on the sidewalk. I just love the theater.
Okay.
Now, I know saying that, actually, the average person just tuning in would think, oh, he goes to live plays. When I say I love the theater, I'm actually meaning the movie theater, but I think that I should, in this town, go see live theater more often.
There's a lot of theaters here.
And I don't do that enough, and that's a weird, I don't know why I don't. I often ask myself why I don't do that, because I always enjoy it when I go. But I don't think it's a money thing either, because I wouldn't go that often where it'd actually hurt me financially. But
yeah, and I thought I heard recently we have the most theaters
per capita.
Right.
Something like that, or second to New York or something. I don't know. But
and you look at the paper listings, there's a ton of small, big, and in between theater and shows always going on. But I'm guilty of the same thing myself. I don't get out. I enjoy plays also, but it's not something I partake in that often, or I would like to do more.
I think it's a weird, there's a weird sort of, some sort of internal barrier that keeps me from thinking that's as accessible as anything else.
Yeah, and I love movies too myself, but I've got two young ones, and for some reason that's become hard to get to these days. I used to go to everything, and now
I'm lucky
to see four shows a year.
Yeah, what I do with my boys, because they have these multiplexes all over the place, you find a movie that would be good for them, and then you're two doors down at one that you like, and you try to time it where they end at the same time, or every now and then you go to theirs. But
that'll be good when they're older. Mine are 3 and 4 right now.
Oh, yeah,
so
it's a little young.
Nine and 12
is a little easier there, right?
Yeah. I hope to get into it more
as
they get older.